love. It's Michelle Monroe with another Matt Monroe classic on the Midweek Drive for Siren 107.3 FM.
Welcome back, Michelle. We know where we are when we actually reach this time of the programme, don't we?
Well, we would hope so.
Exactly. I would indeed. So there we are.
How are you?
I think I'm okay. I'm getting my sort of second wind back now. It's one of those days where kind of around about 1 or 2 o'clock-ish, faced with a series of double book meetings and 3 or 4 other things that need to be coordinated. I thought, I can't cope anymore. I thought, no, just breathe. Let's get it all sorted out from that point of view. And it all worked splendidly. So the team are all in full force here. A terrific trio of fine folk. As I mentioned, just in case you're keeping notes, dear listener, we haven't actually shouted out to Sharon, of course, your mother, yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Do you want to do it now, Katie?
Yeah, if you want.
Would you like to ask Michelle to give a little shout out to Sharon?
Michelle, please, can you give a shout out for my mum, Sharon?
Hello, Sharon.
Nice. Very, very impressive. That's
something special.
Just the fact that she's a listener. We like to cherish everyone, Michelle.
Well,
you know the way we actually work on this.
Haven't we?
Yeah, one in Los Angeles, one in New York, or some other state of the whole routine. No, life continues in its own fabulous way, and you have brought a real treat along today.
I have.
Last week I did say it took me time, and I thought it's nice, it's okay, but as you said, it was a grower. We had to sort of work through the system to sort of come to terms with, of course, the classic My Child.
Yes, My Child. You can't, they're not all, you know, like wowsers from the off.
Well, instant, but
and the ones that actually grow on you, right. I find, are usually the ones that linger the longest.
Now,
I mean, this is a linger. I mean, this week, it's back to Broadway, or more accurately, my father's album, Invitation to Broadway, recorded in New York in 1966. This is the title song to a musical loosely based on a farce by Thornton Wilder called The Merchant of Yonkers, and first appeared on Broadway 2 years earlier with music by Jerry Herman and starring Carol Channing. It was a runaway success and won 10 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. In 1969, it was turned into a lavish Hollywood musical starring Barbara Streisand and a very young Michael Crawford. The song itself was a hit for Louis Armstrong not long after its stage debut. Armstrong's recording was actually made as a promotional tool for the show and not meant for release, being recorded in just a few minutes at the end of a session. However, his record company thought it was great and released it as a single. No one was more surprised than Armstrong when it became a hit, because he didn't even remember recording it. My father's recording is somewhat different to the many other versions recording over the years, in that it moves away from the traditional trad jazz swing treatment and turns it into a lush ballad. The song, I'm sure you've all guessed by now, is Hello Dolly.
What's these days, if you sat around an empty lap, fellas, you'd probably have to have a decent solicitor to actually deal with any legal writs which would come your way. Only kidding, but it's the way that society occasionally goes, as we know. What did we make of that, musical expert and genius and graduate in music and former Lincoln Choir boy Ed Wellman?
Do you know what I thought? I thought it was absolutely lovely. It was just like eavesdropping on somebody having a conversation. You sort of felt like, you know, that was a very, very sensitive performance.
Very personable, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
I was almost tempted to channel a bit of Dean Martin doing a kind of slurred version, but I thought, no, maybe not. It's a different line there. Hannah?
Oh, it was lovely. I just wanted to start swaying and... kind of getting into the moment.
Exactly. That's what you need after a hard day working in the TV studios at the University of Lincoln doing your Level 2 stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it is, rather.
Exactly. Katie?
It was very relaxing.
Yeah. Just thumbs up all round, then. You know, that's 8 thumbs up. 8 thumbs up.
A grower for you, Alex?
Sorry?
A grower for you?
No, actually, an immediate one, actually. First time I was actually... gave me a little bit of panic, actually, in terms of the lateness that Richard sent the thing along, finally. But, you know, it all worked out okay in the end.
I'd like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, there is a time where, you know, wearing my other hat as academic and meeting person, etc., and the thing's delayed, I'm thinking, what are we going to do with it? But it all came through in the end. That's the important thing.
No, the thing is, to be very honest, if you saw the piles in my office... you would understand why it's a bit of a challenge at the moment to get everything done. It's
exactly. And you know, office piles is something I can well identify with. It's a
well,
crucial
thing.
Well,
I'm sorry. sorry.
It's painful. You can't even sit down.
Just don't know where we're going there.
Still, good cream is available. Onwards, Rebecca Poole. The real reason England only got a 1-1 draw in Warsaw because, yeah, they put the roof on. They even actually had the Guardian had a roof watch. The sun was shining, they turned the roof on. Well, they couldn't when it was raining, but if they'd actually launched with Rebecca Poole, what fabulous performance she actually gave on Friday at Wembley Stadium of This Is The Song. We're going to play it again now to actually guide us over to Marina Fiorato. But to take us around to that, Katie, last two questions for Michelle, please.
Michelle, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
How can I not?
And can we look forward to hearing from you in the future?
You will see me next Wednesday on Siren 107.3. FM.
Do you know, we've got a special author coming into the studio as well who's actually writing a rock star romance trilogy. She's already written the first one. She's into the next two as well. She'll be joining us next Wednesday. All sorts of exciting things will be happening. It's just one darn good thing after another here on Siren. Some special announcements coming up again very soon.
I'll speak to you soon.
Well done, Rebecca, on a sensational performance at Wembley Stadium last Friday, just ahead of the England-San Marino game. So marvellous stuff. Our hearts will be brave. This is the song to remind us, could almost be said, not just a kind of harking back to the troops. And of course, a reminder, as Rebecca would wish us to know, that you can actually buy that for iTunes, for Help the Heroes. It's available now. But the kind of theme which the heroines avert, the ace writer Marina Fiorato features in her texts from The Glass Blur of Murano, The Botticelli Secret, Daughter of Siena, a recent one we actually featured on our sister service, Southside Broadcasting, and The Venetian Contract, of course, featuring all manner of wonderfulness. As indeed Hannah O'Brien, you just said, what a wonderful eclectic mix of an individual Marina Fiorato is, didn't you?
Yes, I was quite surprised.
Marina, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much for having me back.
It's a genuine pleasure. So these days, agents switch. So I can't believe you're already, you know, ahead of The Venetian Contract, and we're just at the notion of Daughter of Siena. Excellent text, though, that actually is.
Thank you. Yes, I am sort of on a book a year at the moment, which is crazy, but I'm just about keeping my head together.
It's wonderful, and it's very important that it's actually maintained on that basis. One of the aspects that came across in the discussion and the Book of the Month feature on Daughter of Siena is online now, so you can go and listen to it and say, well, I wonder what they thought. It's a wonderful, readable book. It's sensational on that. There was just a slight sort of notion that it was almost too happy an ending, really, when, obviously, without giving too much away on this particular basis, I thought you were going to leave it on the basis of, well, duty is all, and at the end of the day, the young man who's been found to be the true sort of heir to Siena, he would take on his whole routine, and Pia would basically just go off and have a miserable life. But no, you just wouldn't settle for that. You just said, it's not going to work. We're going to get these guys together.
That's very dark of you, Alex. No, I did toy with the idea, actually, but the problem is there that I was actually dealing with history, and sort of sometimes as a historical novelist you do butt up against the truth, and for me to it had to be that way, really, because historically Violante of Bavaria, the Medici widow who was the governess of Siena, did actually carry on that and govern Siena, and so this lost heir never actually materialised. So I would have had to tell a very big lie in order to sort of shoehorn him into the hot seat there.
When all's said and done, Marina, it is important that historical authenticity, which is the hallmark of so much of your classical work, is adhered to. What would your former tutors actually say? They'd be outraged.
Where's she gone? Can't mess too much. I mean, I mess a little bit. I do sometimes sacrifice tiny details in the course of the story, but you know, I balk at, you know, giving Tuscany a ruler that it didn't have, you know.
I mean, unless of course you use that well-worn science fiction trope and just say it's taking place in a parallel dimension.
Yes, that's just a thought. True. Yeah. I could mix some genres there, couldn't
I? Well, you know, and actually, to be fair, Glass Blur of Murano, that was one of the things which for me really appealed, because you started off in the 21st century, in essence, and kind of cross-reference to the Renaissance times and so on, which I think it might be. I mean, I know your latest books have all been set very much in the medi-Renaissance period and beyond, but you know, ever thought of actually featuring some contemporary stuff mixed in as well?
Yes, I would like to go. I'd like to return to that structure. I think Italy really lends itself to that, because the places that I'm dealing with, such as Siena and Venice, they are so much the same now as they were then. There really has been very little. I mean, in somewhere like London, old buildings and new buildings sort of march side by side. But in Siena and Venice, I mean, they're kept very much as that old world, that kind of microcosm of history. And so I think it's quite easy to feel like you can go back in the past just by turning a corner into sort of beautiful palazzo or a beautiful square. So, yeah, it does lend itself to that a little bit.
And again, congratulations on your research for the Lipizzanas. You're absolutely spot on there. I have actually covered those wonderful beasts in the whole white finery, and I did like the way. But once again, oh, Lord, the horse has died. I just thought, what? You know, unbelievable.
But, you know, interestingly, coming back to what you said initially, that was kind of a necessary balance, and it's kind of a sacrificial thing, you know. It was kind of a...
You have a donkey chucked over the actual battlements in the first routine.
Yeah, it's not all sweetness and light.
No, it's very true, exactly.
Not everyone has a happy ending.
And I point out to Katie, Hannah and Ed, who we'll be speaking to in a few seconds' time, that if you ever sort of find yourself wandering along the streets of Lincoln and find a donkey just chucked over the Lincoln battlements, it's a bad sign.
Yeah, watch it.
It's like getting a sort of horse's head stuck next beside you when you're actually just wandering away. It's not good at all. I know, Marina, you like the random page selector from this particular area.
Oh, I love this. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want to let you down. So we're actually, because I haven't actually as yet got hold of a copy of the Venetian contract, so we'll obviously work through that. We're going back to the Botticelli secret, if that's okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, so a number between, let's see, 1 and 424, please.
Gosh. Now, you might have to test your bleeping skills.
I'm well aware of that.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Words in there, but,
exactly.
How about 77?
77. Hey, okay, right. Well, without any further ado, we'll actually leave this as a lead-in from this particular perspective and take it away. Where is this famous tower? Is that it? I pointed to a rickety crenellation on the river, dilapidated and listing, hung with filthy linens to be cleansed by the rain. Brother Guido's blue eyes flashed, but he ignored my insult. You will see. Well, I was relentless. This certainly is a beauteous city. My argument was assisted by a white who dropped his hose and pushed out three turds into the river from his bare bottom. Where is all this miraculous architecture? You will see. It worked. I could get no more than the single phrase out of my monkish friend, and at length we came to a great wall with an arched gate within. Above the arch was a great stone shield bearing the Medici arms of six great bulls in a ring. The arms made me feel oddly at home, but I was about to see something that I had never seen in Florence. As we went below, Brother Guido said the single word, "Now." And I did see. As we passed the gateway, the rain stopped abruptly, as if delimited by the wall. The sun shone, and a glorious rainbow arced above the most beautiful sight I had ever seen in my short life. Madonna. There, set into a deep green meadow studded with diamond raindrops, towered a holy trinity of the finest buildings ever seen. I slid from my mount, mouth slack with wonder. In the bright sun, the white cathedral was a dazzling marble casket. The baptistery, a perfectly balanced round jewel of a building, crowned with a filigree diadem. And most fantastic of all, the campanile, leaning at an impossible angle. The fabled tower reached into the sky with layer upon layer of perfectly arched loggias, slender galleries and arcades of snowy white, spiralling round and ever upward in their lofty measure. As you may have noticed there, Marina, I did actually drop the word bottom in as opposed to arsenal. But it's okay, you know. I just felt, you know, we'd had turd. We just needed to work our way through that. It's not a critical comment on the show.
I did curl my toes slightly I knew you were heading for that moment, but you handled it beautifully.
That's the radio edit, of course. Very important for these sort of things. So, from that little teaser, Katie, does it make you want to buy the book and read more?
It does, because I like history anyway, so...
Yeah. Is this what, Hannah?
Yeah, I do like a good kind of history novel. I was reading the summary of The Botticelli Secret on
The computer
over there just now. It looks really interesting.
I would lend it to Hannah, but I never see it again, actually. Because this is the cherished to Alex best wishes, and thanks for all the support, best wishes, Marina, for your auto copy. I don't let it out of my sight, you know, it's just very important from that point of view. It's treasured, as you can tell, Marina. Ed?
Yeah, and I think for me, I visited Murano and Venice about 10 years ago now. And I actually never really realised why it's different. And when you said, you know, the age of the buildings and it's all still so old, that is exactly why it's so amazing, isn't it?
So I think it's thumbs up, Marina, in terms of three new purchasers of the Botticelli Secret. So that'll help.
Fantastic. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
And, of course, the listener is duly bound to go through that as well. Did that pass muster? Would you like to just set the scene in terms of what that referred to? Because obviously it was quite literally the random selector choice of reading. So what were we focusing on there?
Yes, that was quite a lucky page, actually, because you were seeing, of course, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. So they were just riding into Pisa. That would be my heroine, who is a Florentine prostitute named Luciana Vetra, and her sort of unlikely travelling companion, who is a monk called Brother Guido della Torre, and he's called della Torre because he's from Pisa, and so we're going back to his home city there. So, yes, she set that scene very nicely.
It's always important to actually do justice to these kind of things. That is something which certainly does genuinely appeal about the text. And although it's fair to say, you know, that we felt The Daughter of Siena, It's a Wonderful, didn't quite sort of reach those. I think it's probably, as we were saying to Michelle Monroe recently, some of the sort of musical material that Father Matt produced, it's a grower. It sort of takes time. And I'm actually thinking now, maybe we should actually go back to Daughter of Siena and actually reread it. I think, you know, because it was such a startlingly wonderful scenario, the Glass Blur of Murano, the Botticelli Secret and so on. It seemed as though we were in a very familiar land with Daughter of Siena. Share with us the Venetian contract. Where does that take us?
Oh, well, I'm in quite unfamiliar territory for this one, because I actually travel as far east as Istanbul or Constantinople.
You bring in the Turks?
Yes, I do. Yes, absolutely. In fact, my heroine this time is a Turkish harem doctor called Feyre, and she comes over to Venice literally with the plague. And she arrives at the same time, and it's kind of a love story between herself and a Western plague doctor called Annibale Casson. And it's their sort of clash of personalities and the clash of their medical ideologies, Eastern medicine versus Western medicine. So that's kind of the backdrop.
I think we're already talking about another 10 out of 10. You know, the daughter, I feel almost ashamed, mate, that the team went more for an average of 8.5 to 9, actually, for Daughter of Siena.
Well, that's still good. I'll take that.
Here's a crucial piece. Ed, any questions you'd like to put to Marina about life, the universe, what it's like being a Renaissance woman in the 21st century?
I'd like to ask you questions for hours, actually, about being a writer. But the one I would like to ask you is, you know, I find it quite difficult to read a long book. I always have. I find that I'm sort of all right for the first 3 or 4 pages, and then I kind of lose it a little bit. When you're writing, is there any part of the book that you're sort of particularly aware of sort of catching and maintaining the reader's interest, or is it just all of it?
That's a very good question. Actually, it's very important, as you'd imagine, to get the beginning right and to try and grab somebody. And it's something that I think everybody really struggles with, because the problem is that at the beginning of the book, you are trying to set a scene, so necessarily there's got to be quite a lot of exposition. You're introducing characters, and that can be quite chewy. You know, it can be quite hard to get people to turn the pages with that. I've noticed with all my books, actually, that chapters get shorter towards the end. I think that's an inevitable kind of speeding up of the story. You're not having to stop and explain things every 2 minutes, because we then know the characters. But yeah, I think the beginning... Yeah, it's a good question. It's something I obviously still struggle with, but I think trying to get the beginning right is crucial. In the first couple of pages, really, if someone's going to put the book down, then you've really lost them.
Cinematic is an adjective that I frequently use to describe the text that you produce, Marina, and I know when last we spoke we were thinking of various other projects, options and things that are actually happening there. I appreciate you might well say, I can't say anything about that. Shh! You know, my agent would go ballistic. But it is one of those areas where I know of directors and producers who actually listen to the whole thing. I would say if they haven't already put in an option for these things, then they're insane. But, you know, you do feature and you manage to have captured good, strong female characters who actually lead. I mean, even the lead character in The Venetian Contract, Pia, Daughter of Siena, get it sorted out, she kind of comes across as being initially a kind of Keira Knightley-esque character, Keira Knightley probably in The Duchess, not one of her finest hours, according to Richard Fitzwilliams, but that's another story. But she has chutzpah. She actually has a way of actually coping with things, even when, you know, dark despair seems to be threatening thing. And how unfortunate is it, girls, when a person you don't want to get married actually gets killed in a horse race, and then you end up with his brother who's twice as bad? Unbelievable! You know?
It's pretty unlucky, isn't it?
Talk about unlucky Pia, but never mind. It all worked out okay in the end, and it's the road forward. So, in terms of that cinematic routine, are we still talking about, or is it one of those wonderful things where we say, well, look, the texts are out there, at the end of the day, I shall just have to, they will manifest in their own magical ways, and I'll move on with books 5, 6, and 7?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, I will carry on writing, but things have moved forward on the film front and actually on TV front since we last spoke.
Excellent.
So the Venetian Contract is going to be made into a film, hopefully starting to shoot next year. And as with all adaptations, it will be vastly different, I imagine, from the form that it's in at the moment. But still, you know, we take that on board, that's fine. And Botticelli's Secret has now been auctioned for a sort of a long-form TV series in the sort of mould of the Tudors or the Borgias or Game of Thrones, which I'm actually very pleased about because I always had reservations about it becoming a movie. But in this way, it's going to be a 10-part, hopefully, TV series. So
there is so much magic in here. I mean, not just the sort of way in which you actually provide that wonderful arts lesson in terms of how La Primavera, Botticelli's finest, actually emerges and develops from that point of view. It's great. I mean, I think it's fantastic stuff on that perspective. So, you know, we applaud and congratulate the perceptive nature of the producers who have actually gone for that.
Well, thank you very much.
So, as we actually head off to Hayley Birdsall, who's going to be regaling us with tales of her young life as an actress in Durham, where she's reading English literature, hopefully she'll actually come across some Marina Fiorato classics. We will be with her. And then Phil Leonis, we need to ask you, Marina Fiorato, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on your return to the Midweek Drive?
Very much so. I always enjoy this very much. And I love speaking to you all there. And I love the random page selector, as you know, is my favourite thing in the world ever. I'm always delighted to do that one.
You know, as I say, other stations might try to do that, but, you know, we will push that barrier. Total sort of shock in the whole routine. Are you ready to join us again then in the very near future, probably this side of Christmas when we've actually got hold of copies of the Venetian Contract and
I would love to. Try and stop me.
Hey, Marina Fiorato. A round of applause, please. Fantastic stuff.
Some nights I stay up, cashing in my padlock. Some nights I call it a draw. Some nights I wish that my lips could build a castle. Some nights I wish they just fall off. But I still wake up, I still see your ghost. But Lord, I'm still not sure what I stand for.
Tempted to actually march through the streets of a particular city, just with that in the background. Fun, technically fun, period, because they needed the full stop, just to kind of identify them as separate from other kinds of fun. We enjoy them. Some nights here on Siren 107.3 FM, the Midweek Drive. Phil Leonis is coming up from Los Angeles very, very shortly, but who's online now? Katie Grimerson. Yeah, on the paper in front of you, Haiti. It's called
not
the running
on,
order.
It's not on the paper.
No, Haiti Birdsall. It says TBA. You see, TBA, TBA.
It's a mystery act.
It's a mystery, as Toya Wilcox once said, before your time, Hannah. It's Hebe Birdsall. Yes, how are you, Hebe?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, the shocking news that Hebe reveals to me off air, she hasn't been listening to the show, the big build-up we were sharing with her, Hebe Birdsall, etc., because she's been working. Now, is that academic work, like a good student of English should actually do in the joys of the hallowed cathedral city of Durham, or is it a case of working for money?
No, I've actually been working on my Shakespeare for a seminar tomorrow. Not
working for her seminar tomorrow. On Shakespeare, did you say?
Yeah.
Marvellous. We are such stuff as dreams are made of, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Where does that come from, then?
Oh, my God.
Yeah? It's you. Yeah, it's the Tempest.
I knew that one. Only because it was the only play I think I studied.
at school, so.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Here's another one for you, which sadly none of my Level 1 journalism students actually got this morning when we were talking about, you know, the sort of roots of journalism and developing things from this point of view. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our poor philosophy, Horatio.
Hamlet.
Hey, she's recovered there, Hamlet.
Yeah.
Absolutely spot on there. Yes, she is a proper English student after all. Well done.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yeah. Otherwise, we would have said it was that time at Harry Potter and the Harry Potter studios that effectively you'd been corrupted by popular culture. Yeah, get it sorted. So here we are. It's your third telephonic appearance with us. You know, one on another station for Midweek Drive Morning Edition, graduated onto the Midweek Drive, one of the senior routines. Katie, any questions you'd like to put to Hebe Birdsall?
What's your favourite Shakespeare play?
I have to admit that I don't really like Shakespeare. I know, it's like the worst confession.
Are your tutors listening to this? You know, are you going to admit that tomorrow when you go into the seminar and say, and this is, of course, Hebe Birdsall, who said that last year and first year her tutors were just wild and crazy, you know? Couldn't remember any of their names, but what the heck, it's Durham. Now, are you going to actually go in there and say, Shakespeare, just, you know, what did he do? A bit of a iambic pentameter?
Well, it's quite difficult sometimes. Like, the language is quite difficult.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just as well you don't do Chaucer's Canterbury Tale, is all I can say.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. Let's just work through that. So, yeah, but is there a favourite show? To pursue Katie's line of questioning remorselessly there and unremittingly, is there a particular Shakespearean play that you sort of think, yeah, actually, I'd go for that?
Well, I guess I've just studied Henry V, and I've just watched both of the film adaptations.
Yeah.
And I'm at, like, watching the films enables, like, better understanding of it. So I guess that I kind of connected to that one more because, you know,
we are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His racket and these balls we thank him for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we shall in France, by God's grace, play a set, shall strike his father's crown into the hazard. And we understand him well, how he comes o'er us in our wilder days. We never valued this poor seat of England, and therefore, living hence, did give ourselves to barbarous license. Sorry, you mentioned Henry V, my own personal favourite, just had to drop it in there. Classic Prince Hal speech. It all works together, doesn't it, Ed?
Well, I can recite four words of Shakespeare, if I may.
To be.
From Twelfth Night,
yes,
Malvolio says, I smell a device.
Hey, there we are.
I love it.
Shakespeare in smell-o-vision and smell-o-sound. Fantastic. Have to alert the listener, if they hadn't been aware that the Stephen K. Amos interview was a pre-record, I did mention that. That's the reason we had the voices of Charles Ather and indeed Gillian Appleton also in that particular thing. If you're thinking, did they just come in for that little piece and then run away again? No, it's a pre-record. It's part of the magic. You know, Katie here, solidly, you know, one of the rock on which the whole shows is actually built. Hannah, likewise, Rookie of the Year. And of course, Ed, who has graduated to that sort of field in many ways. You know, it's marvellous. Ed, any questions for Hebe from yourself? As somebody who's never seen a Harry Potter film in your life.
It's a terrible thing to admit, isn't it? And what I will ask you is there a kind of grumpy, eccentric teacher in Harry Potter?
Where do you start? I mean, where do you start, really, Hebe?
Because when people try to insult me, they go, you're like that grumpy teacher.
Snape.
Is that who it is?
Well, it could be.
All right, okay.
Could be lots of others. Could be even the Maggie
Smith.
Thank you. There we are. Dame Maggie Smith. Yes, exactly. I mean, were any of the actors grumpy with you on set? Obviously, you don't have to mention their names because you might be working with them soon, Hebe, but, you know.
No, they were all lovely to me.
That's all right, then. Yeah. It's, obviously, we would have wanted to know why. Now, have you actually been to the big Harry Potter exhibition that was set up?
No, I haven't. No.
You mean you didn't get a cast iron invitation to that?
Oh, but I've heard that my portrait is hanging somewhere.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. Yeah, it's always important when you're a second year at university to have your portrait hanging somewhere. It's very important. Yeah. Don't worry, Hannah, your portrait will always be hanging in some certain part of the country. There we are. And Katie is, of course, needless to say. Hebe, it's been astounding in every sense of the word, and I feel, you know, we're pushed for time. We're going to head off to the delights of Los Angeles to speak to Phil Leonis. Time is tight as ever, so I need to throw those last two questions to Hannah O'Brien to throw once again at yourself.
Hebe, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with yourself again in the near future?
We hopefully have kind of provided you with a few hints to actually impress your tutor at tomorrow's English seminar.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to actually know how that sort of, you know, pans out, because it's always important when you actually work through that. And
yeah,
it could be a whole range of things on that perspective.
Which play are you studying tomorrow in your seminar?
I'm doing Hamlet, in fact.
Ah, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no one shall return, Star Trek VI. Or is it better in the original Klingon? I don't know. Very strange. Hebe, we salute you. Here's Christopher Cross.